of the fragment of the Bodhi, he was able to keep experimenting even after accumulating one grisly wound after another. Zack had initially been afraid that the experiments would worsen his mental condition even more, but he soon realized it was the opposite. His mind actually calmed down after having shot out a bronze flash. It almost felt like some sort of mental bloodletting, where the darkness in his mind was expelled through the Tao implosions. The explanation that Zack felt was most likely was that the splinter of oblivion had a part in the creation of the bronze sparks somehow. Perhaps it acted as a base to what the two fragments would fuse into, like a blueprint to the higher Taos. That would explain the increased success rate of forming the bronze sparks compared to his trials during the seventh floor. Before, the only energies from the splinter that suffused his soul were the small amounts of purified energy that the miasmic fractals slowly let out of the cage. But now his soul was completely infiltrated. The improvements felt like a small silver lining to the mess he found himself in. But there were still some parts that he hadn't figured out. Things weren't working out as he had hoped with his third Tao fragment. No matter how many times he tried, he simply couldn't form some equivalent of the bronze flash when trying to fuse the fragment of the Bodhi with the fragment of the axe. The same problem arose when trying to fuse the Bodhi with the coffin. Only the combination of axe and coffin worked, leaving Zack wondering just what was missing. Did the second fusion require another method of activation to work? Or did it only work because the destructive flash leaned toward oblivion rather than creation? His utter failure was another hint that he was on the right track about the splinter, but he still wasn't completely convinced. The two grand Taos of creation and oblivion were extremely high concepts, and pretty much all lower Taos should contain hints of both of them. The Bodhi wasn't pure creation, and the coffin wasn't pure oblivion. Not even the higher concepts of life and death that he was striving for were pure creation and oblivion, so it was a bit odd that he couldn't mix the fragment of the axe, which by itself should lean toward oblivion, with the fragment of the Bodhi. There was no real way for him to verify what was really going on at the moment. For now, he could only take the opportunity to self-medicate while working out the possibilities and limitations of the bronze flashes. It seemed that desperation had played a part in managing to actually use the Tao implosions. His left arm was a mess after having ruptured dozens of times, but he had managed to successfully destroy a strong beast in the heat of battle once with the help of the Tao implosion. The key seemed to be adrenaline, or rather, battle lust. When he was just experimenting while traversing the worlds, he was too calm, and that led to him being too slow in moving the bronze spark out of his body. It was as if he was energized, then the blob of energy he created would be energized as well. Zack even tried to slap himself and roar at the top of his lungs to get his blood pumping, but it wasn't very effective. Only his true fight-or-flight responses seemed to be working, perhaps as they activated some primal part of his brain. His theory of the origin of the flashes also gave Zack some clues into what needed to be done to somewhat formalize his creation. The largest problem was that he had no control over the energies he created, and he could only push it forward. But perhaps there was a solution. He needed to take control of the splinter of oblivion. If the flashes were truly created with help from the debris of the splinter, then he needed to somehow form a connection with it. It would allow him to guarantee a successful formation rather than leaving things up to fate. It would perhaps even allow him to stabilize the volatile energy long enough that he could infuse it into skills rather than just throwing it away like a hot potato. Messing with the splinter would come with huge risks, though, and Zack wasn't confident at even attempting to opening the miasmic cage in his mind before his soul was a lot stronger compared to now. It once again came back to a lack of time. He wished he could jump into some time chamber and practice 9 Reincarnations manual until his soul was strong enough to withstand the splinter's influence. However, Zack didn't spend all his time on the bronze flashes. as they were still somewhat of a long-term goal. He had gained many other new upgrades that needed to be better understood, such as his new Tao fragment. One slightly surprising benefit was just how much stronger the fragment had made his Hatchet Man class. Zack was currently assaulting a massive army on the 67th floor, and he was being pelted from all directions as he tried to reach the princess in the middle of the army. He was somewhat confident that she was the level guardian, and Zack had immediately set out toward her army the moment he learned of her insane crusade. This level was the same as the previous ones on the 8th floor. He had quickly learned of rumors talking about a divine tree that was about to bear fruit. Elites from all over the world were getting ready to compete for the natural treasure, as the fruit seemed to possess the capabilities of opening the third eye. The effect of the third eye, or the soul's eye, sounded a lot like his danger sense after asking around, and he felt that combining the two might almost turn him permanently omniscient, like when he used Hatchet Man's spirit. But he could only ignore the temptation while cursing the fact that he was too slow. If he had another month left in his climb, he could have cleaned up on these last levels, but now he didn't have the leeway to take any detours. Targeting one of the amazing treasures that appeared on each level now would essentially erase any chances of completing the floor, so the treasure had to be more tempting than an upgraded title and a tailor-made reward from the system itself. And while the treasures thus far had all seemed extremely valuable, they weren't quite at that level so far. That didn't make the situation less frustrating, though. Luckily, he had a whole army to take out his annoyance on, and a storm of purple leaves flew around him as he waded into the army that desperately tried keeping him at bay. It was nature's barrier that had changed its appearance after getting infused with the fragment of the Bodhi and reaching peak mastery. Not only had the leaves become shockingly sturdy, but the skill even provided a restorative effect in the eye of the storm now. It was just like the hidden world within the cherry tree's canopy in the vision. If Zack had had the fragment while fighting the Swordmaster in the Battle of Fates, he probably wouldn't have needed to use any other defenses than this skill. His defensive skill wasn't the only one that had benefited from gaining the fragment of the Bodhi. Pretty much every single nature-aspected skill in his repertoire became stronger in one way or another, just like how Coffin added all kinds of effects to his death-attuned skills. The forest created from Hatchet Man's spirit now provided a defensive sphere from the outside. It wasn't too useful for Zack at his current stage, but it would help with keeping allies safe in large-scale conflicts. The skill had also reached middle proficiency on the last level, since he was pretty much forced to activate it during every battle now. One surprising skill that benefited from the Tao fragment was Loam Walker. Not only did it increase the distance he could travel with each step, especially inside forests, but Zack even felt a mysterious energy rising from the ground and entering his body with every step. The energy was an earthy brown when he looked at it with cosmic gaze, and he guessed it was earth-attuned energies. He didn't have a use for the attuned energies, but being able to move much faster was a godsend. The fabric of space cracked as Zack closed in on the princess's command tent, and a wooden hand covered in leaves and flowers quickly emerged, causing verdant lights to fly around its fingers in an exuberant dance. An outsider might think that the vibrant image might mean that the massive hand was about to bestow a blessing on the lands, but the reality wasn't quite so benign. Zack had quickly figured out the fundamental use of the fragment of the Bodhi, apart from the healing. Life mutated and grew far beyond its normal means within the canopy of the consecrated cherry tree, and Zack was able to bestow that same effect to his skills. That meant that it wasn't simply a defensive or offensive boost to his nature skills, but rather a foundational empowerment. Nature's barrier naturally became even better at defense as the leaves mutated, but the hand instead evolved in a more forceful direction, which was evident by the terrifying aura it had started to radiate. A 200-meter-wide array appeared as an immense pressure, forcing the average soldiers down on their knees. An enormous sword saint appeared in the sky above the command tent, likely the avatar conjured by the princess he was targeting. She was currently on a path of carnage to earn the respect of her father, but her path was littered by the bodies of innocent civilians who were unlucky enough to live too close to the border of a rival kingdom. Zack had no moral issue with taking someone like this out. She didn't respect the lives of others to attain her goal, so why should he respect hers? The massive sword saint aimed her sword at the core of the array, which also meant that the wooden hand above it was targeted. Destructive energies started gathering around the avatar, but Zack wasn't worried, as an unassuming trunk descended from the core of the array. Chapter 35. Little Bean. The single tree looked like any ordinary one, apart from its lack of branches, but it quickly grew into a tremendous spike, like the finger of a forest god. It just took a second for it to grow to a size that almost eclipsed the mountains he had pulled through the array before, and the tip of the tree pushed straight toward the command center beneath. A shocking burst of energy rippled out from the massive avatar's weapon, and multiple layers of the protective membrane of nature's barrier were decimated, even though the princess aimed at nature's punishment rather than in his direction. A hollow with a diameter of almost 50 meters was punched straight through the wooden spike, but hundreds of branches grew from the hole and emerged to restore its original form. Zack felt a huge strain on his mind from the increased consumption, but he could only grit his teeth as he pierced the avatar with his punishment. The avatar only managed to ineffectually rip off a few layers of the branch before it was forcibly dispelled, and the branch passed through the chaotic energies as it slammed straight into the command tent where the princess resided. The ground heaved and cracked, and Zack felt a surge of energy enter his body. A shudder went through his body as a storm of miasma spread to every inch. The hundreds of leaves around him disappeared into motes of light, and the verdant forest of Hatchet Man's spirit was gone a second later. Only the towering tree remained as a testament of his earlier attacks. That didn't mean the army was safe, though, as billowing clouds of corrosion and miasma quickly spread out before the warriors had time to understand what was going on. This was the true power of the upgraded core, and it was the only feature that mattered as far as Zack was concerned. It was disappointing that it hadn't provided any attributes when reaching E-grade, but the transformation only took a second now, as long as he used Iriel's transformation skill. Not only that, but he had also learned that he could now transform twice before he needed to wait for an hour again. In other words, he could now almost completely freely use his two classes in one battle as long as he had a second to spare during a fight. Zack stomped the ground and appeared next to the massive branch that was stabbed into the ground, just in time to see a part of it explode as his target emerged. She was drenched in blood, and one of her arms hung limply to her side, but she still radiated the aura of someone with fight left in her. The cage of profane seal was erected with the branch in the middle, and five of the chains cut into the massive piece of wood. A surge of energy entered Zack's body as he started his usual whittling down of his enemy. It was one interesting perk he had found from being able to quickly change between classes. Most of his skills disappeared when he changed classes, but there were two exceptions. The first exception was the punishments he could summon through nature's punishment, like the tree he was able to call forth since gaining the fragment of the Bodhi. It was teeming with life force that the chains could steal and then feed to his Draugr form. This synergy was why he opted for the tree rather than the massive mountain he usually used. It made him even more unkillable, as the piece of wood turned into an enormous battery that would keep him going far longer than he would be able to without. It was to the point that miasma steamed out of his body due to overconsumption, which further aligned the surroundings in his favor against living enemies. The second skill that lingered was Winds of Decay. The skill was made from his breath, so it didn't matter that he changed class, as the mists remained. This wasn't as much of a boon, though, as the skill targeted him the moment he changed to his human form. It didn't bother him, thanks to his huge pool of vitality, but it was still pretty uncomfortable to stand inside. The miasmic cage shook as the two clashed one time after another, but soon enough the princess couldn't stand it any longer. Her body was covered in festering wounds as the armor-clad Zack towered above her. "Why?" she asked with fury and despair in her eyes. "Who are you?"
"Fate, I guess,"
Zack answered as his bardage fell. Zack didn't swap back to his human form just yet, as he wasn't sure what would await him at the other side of the teleporter. He rather just restored his reserves to peak condition before he stepped through to the next realm. It felt like he was being squeezed for every piece of potential he had, and he was embroiled in constant battle as he kept going. At least it kept the splinter mostly satiated as he ripped through the later levels of the eighth floor. Unfortunately, he never heard of any treasures or inheritances that seemed able to restrain the corruption in his mind, and this continued all the way to the 71st level. The second-to-last level of the eighth floor would no doubt be a real nightmare, but his all-out push the past weeks had at least made sure he had over 3 days to complete it. Varun's bite was already high in the air to counter any sneak attack, and Zack had equipped Everlasting and changed into his Draugr form just in case of a sudden assault. But when the scenery changed, he realized there would be no ambush this time around, the moment he stepped through the teleporter. The surprising stillness even seemed to subdue the splinter in his mind, and it crept into the back of its miasmic cage. He was in a small cabin that was best described as futuristic. The whole wall in front of him was just one massive screen that seemed to be showing a blueprint, and another wall displayed a majestic nebula and stars that were fixed in the distance. Zack almost forgot he was in the Tower of Eternity for a second as he looked around with excitement. Was he on a spaceship? That was the immediate conclusion, judging by the screen in front of him, unless he was reading the blueprint completely wrong. The map showed an elongated vessel that looked pretty sleek, apart from a large circular bulb in the middle, and Zack found that he was able to zoom in and out by touching the screen. The first thing he could see was that the ship was just massive. He was currently in a section that seemed to house thousands of cabins, just like the cabin floors on a cruise liner. The cabin he was in was around 20 square meters, and while it was less than a tenth the size of the largest cabin, it was still a decent size. Each cabin had a series of numbers or letters marked, though Zack couldn't read them. He guessed it was either the name or a serial number of the person who lived inside. Some cabins were pretty large, but they had over 20 numbers attached, meaning they were probably barracks or shared domiciles. Perhaps the cabin belonged to some sort of middle management or a petty officer on board the space cruiser. The huge number of cabins only took up a small section of the total space on the ship, though, and he saw that there were more sections just like it. If not for the shape and the two massive thrusters at the back of the vessel, he would have thought it was a space station rather than a ship. He tried to engrave every detail into his mind in case he needed it later, but it seemed the resident of this cabin only had limited access, as over half the ship was blacked out, except the general outline. Perhaps those sections were critical parts of the ship only accessible to authorized personnel. Zack eventually backed away and tried to figure out his next step. A quest screen conveniently appeared after he retreated, indicating what needed to be done. Stop the little bean from returning from its expedition. Zack wasn't overly surprised to read the contents of the quest after seeing the surroundings, But some hesitation crept into his heart as he looked at the wall displaying the vibrant nebula in the distance. This was still the Tower of Eternity, right? Or had the system sent him out on an actual mission to mess with its enemies, the technocrats? Since meeting the Hainer Patriarch, he had started wondering if he was actually ever inside the tower, or if he was just sent to various corners of the multiverse like when he'd completed the sovereignty quest. A muffled swishing sound interrupted his thoughts as the door leading to his quarters suddenly opened, displaying a young man who was looking down with a troubled frown at a screen that hovered in front of him. He entered the small cabin without even looking up, and he only noticed something was wrong when a gray object ripped through the air straight toward his head. His eyes widened in shock when he looked up, only to find himself face to face with Zack, and an orange shield started to materialize around him. But it was much too late, and Everlasting slammed into his head with enough force to throw him into the wall, knocking him out cold. Zack hurried over and dragged the man further inside the cabin, and sighed in relief when he saw that the cabin door closed by itself. Things calmed down again, but Zack stood frozen for almost 10 minutes, waiting for some backup to come rushing through the door. But it looked like his actions had gone by unnoticed, allowing him to breathe out in relief. Zack didn't put away his weapons, but rather just hunched down to take stock of the man whose cabin he had been thrown into. It was a human just like himself, or at least mostly human. Some parts of his body seemed to be mechanical, which Zack guessed made the man a cyborg. His clothing made him believe he wasn't a warrior like the other cyborg he had met, but rather some sort of non-combat personnel. He had also all but confirmed Zack's suspicions that this was a technocrat vessel. The shield that he had smashed through was clearly of technological origin, just like those in the technocrat incursion, though it was a bright orange instead of the red ones back then. Apart from the shield, there were no signs of any weaponry on him. The man wore a uniform made out of cloth, and there was not a single fractal anywhere on them. His build wasn't anything to write home about either, and when Zack activated Cosmic Gaze, there was almost no response either from the man or the surroundings. It made Zack guess that he was on a vessel belonging to the Machine God faction. Both Transcenders and Technomancers would possess at least some equipment connected to cultivation. Zack quickly found the source of the shield, a small bracelet on his arm, and after having taken it off, he started to look for any piece of detachable technology on him until he finally poured some water over the unconscious man.
How?
The man sputtered as he wildly looked around, making Zack realize that the guy even had mechanical eyes.
Who are you? How did you manage to board the little bean? We just fell out of subspace. Never mind that, Zack said as his pitch-black orbs pierced into the man's augmented vision, making him flinch. Tell me what I need to know, and I'll let you live. If you're not willing to cooperate, I don't mind killing and reanimating you. You will help me one way or another.
No, please!
The man cried, clearly horrified at the prospect of being turned into a zombie. Being a Draugr had its advantages, and there was no way for the guy to know that Zack didn't even know how to turn someone into a revenant. None of those he had killed in his undead form seemed to have shown any inclination to turn, at least, meaning there was probably some hidden component to it.
Have you heard of the Tower of Eternity? Zack asked first, wanting to check on his earlier suspicions.
The Tower of Eternity? The man said with confusion. Never heard of it. It's not related to our corporation, I swear.
Zack nodded in relief, but he suddenly froze. His answer sounded similar to all the others during his climb, but there was one significant difference. He actually mentioned the tower by name, which had never happened before. They had always responded with some sort of confusion and completely glossed over the mention.
What is your name?
and what is your mission? Zack asked as he settled in front of the man, who had slowly inched toward a corner of his cabin.
I am Jowl. I'm just a comms officer of the Little Bean. No one important, he said.
A comms officer? Zack repeated.
Know this. If you send out an alert through any hidden gadgets that end with me cornered, then I'll kill you first before trying to fight my way out.
The man quickly nodded his head, but Zack noticed his eyes darted toward his arm, where Zack had taken off the wristwatch.
Where is the Little Bean heading? Zack asked, and pushed the axe toward the man once again when he seemed hesitant to answer.
Answer me. We're heading to the closest outpost, but we've fallen out of subspace,
Jowl explained.
It's because of that thing. I guess that's why you're here. It has created too many anomalies for our engines to handle. We were forced out of subspace until our engineers can fix the damage.
Zack's interest was piqued when he heard about the situation aboard the ship. It was clear that the leaders of the Little Bean had found something that they wanted to bring back to their forces, but it was obviously something pretty amazing if it could mess with the entire vessel and its advanced technology. It also gave him a lead in completing the quest in the normal manner. If he could take out the engineers, or somehow sabotage the repair efforts, then he would essentially be done with the mission. The best thing would be to blow up the engines altogether, but Zack guessed that they would be pretty hard to get to. But it felt entirely possible that the chief engineer would be the guardian if it wasn't the captain.
What have you found out about the item?
Zack urged, not wanting to let on he had no idea what the guy was talking about.
It keeps bending the laws of physics in unpredictable ways, fusing and changing matter without following any of the known rules. It really deserves being a shard from the spark of creation,
Jowl exclaimed, excitement seemingly making him forget he was a hostage at the moment.
Spark of creation?
Zack repeated, his eyes widening. Didn't this sound a bit too familiar? Chapter 36. Road of No Return. The more questions Zack asked about the item the technocrats had found, the more certain he became. The item truly seemed to be the equivalent of the splinter of oblivion in his mind. The technocrats had found it on a low-tiered world at the edge of some sector, though they hadn't realized its true origins initially. Apparently, the technocrat factions often released swarms of drones that floated about in the multiverse, and now and then they'd pick up odd energy fluctuations from valuable materials. Beauty was in the eye of the beholder, and some things that might seem useless to cultivators could be extremely valuable to the technocrats, and vice versa. This time, though, they knew that there was a special item rather than raw materials, and it would be discovered sooner or later. Orders were quickly sent out from above, and they tasked the ship Jowl worked on to retrieve it before the local factions realized there was a treasure under their nose. The shard, which was what they called it, had long since fused with a humanoid cultivator, which had created a series of shocking changes in both his physique and his surroundings. The man was F-grade, like Zack himself, and he had managed to stave off the effects for almost 5 years before he started to succumb to the influences of the item. The splinter of oblivion was like an insidious whisper that caused its user to become an avatar of destruction, a madman who couldn't stop fighting. It had been the same for everyone Zack had seen in the visions, with the exception of the Draugr woman. However, the effect of the shard of creation was completely different, according to the technocrat. An item of creation sounded like something positive to Zack, but that truly hadn't been the case for the poor cultivator. If the splinter turned people into powerful lunatics, then the shard turned them into monsters. The moment the man lost control, he had started transforming and growing. New limbs, weird tumors, hair, horns, and all types of appendages had started growing on the man, who quickly changed from a normal biped into a massive blob of flesh. Some parts of him had even changed their composition completely, turning into rocks, precious metals, and constructs that moved about. There seemed to be no limits to his changes, as long as he didn't run out of energy. He had completely drained the area he lived in by the time the technocrats had arrived, and they believed he would keep absorbing energy until his soul couldn't take it any longer. Of course, the man had become a raving lunatic by the point the technocrats arrived. Being forcibly turned into a monstrosity that kept growing and changing had to be unimaginably painful. They had obliterated the being with orbital attacks, turning multiple square kilometers into a smoldering hellscape, leaving only the shard intact. The task force quickly loaded the items and hurriedly fled. The attack on an integrated planet with advanced weaponry had launched a wide-scale quest of retribution, and they had been forced to fight their way out of the sector while constantly dogged by spiritual vessels and the powerhouses steering them. The shard was now kept in a secured field that was designed to isolate energies, but it kept causing trouble to their vessel through bursts of creation that slipped through. It had turned a motor into a sentient golem and changed a highly condensed liquid energy into something that smelled like wine. It had already forced the little being out of subspace 6 times, and if it weren't for the multiple layers of redundancies and skilled technicians, the ship would have been turned to scrap metal stuck in the middle of nowhere. A few of the crew had wanted them to drop it off at a desolate planet and let someone else pick it up, but the captain was adamant about being the one who brought it in.
"How long until you return?" Zack asked.
2 weeks, Jowl hurriedly said.
"I will capture more people, and if they give another answer, I'll come back for you, understand?"
Zack said, his pitch-black eyes boring into the comms officer.
"One day, if we get the subspace engines running,"
the comms officer hurriedly corrected himself as he repeatedly bowed his head in apology.
"We would have already been picked up if the shard hadn't completely destroyed our antennas as well. I have worked on opening up a line of communication for days now, but we are lacking some components."
Zack slowly nodded with a snort. This sounded more like a situation that the system would arrange. The engineers might be able to get the system up and running at any moment, at which point he would be barreling toward an enemy stronghold. He would need to delay the efforts or quickly tackle the Guardian if he wanted a shot at defeating the level. But there was one thing Zack didn't really understand.
"Can't your people scan this area if you're so close?"
Zack asked skeptically.
"Just 1 day of travel?"
"One day in subspace can be both close and impossibly far. We would pass through multiple dimensional layers. Our space station doesn't have that advanced scanning equipment,"
Jowl said.
"How strong is the most powerful warrior on your vessel? And how strong is your chief engineer?"
Zack probed.
"Strongest warrior?"
Jowl said.
"The captain is a Class 3 transhuman, and the chief engineer is only lacking a few critical upgrades to reach late Class 2. My readings are telling me that you are somewhere in the range of early to middle Class 2. Why not just leave instead of throwing your life away? I will not say anything."
Zack only glared at the technocrat without saying anything, making him shrink back toward the wall again. Classes were likely the equivalent of ranks to the Machine God faction, where Jowl had mistaken him for middle E-grade. It made Zack a bit curious about the mechanical eyes he employed, but now was not the time. Hearing that there was a D-grade warrior on the ship was problematic. He wouldn't be able to run rampant and simply cut his way through to the engineering bay. If the captain suddenly showed up, his only recourse would be to crush his token. However, the real issue was the shard. Should he go for it? It felt like the system was presenting him with an alternative to assaulting the 8th floor Guardian. He could either target the engineers and the engine to delay the ship, or he could snatch the shard of creation. In a perfect world, he would be able to do both, but either action would no doubt expose his presence on the ship and result in a massive response. With someone like the captain on board, he wasn't very confident in completing either task, and doing both seemed nigh impossible. The question was what he wanted the most. The past levels had pushed him pretty hard, and he wasn't completely confident in a fight against a floor guardian of this power level. But the rewards would no doubt be shocking as well. The gains from the 7th floor had been extremely suited for him, and the completion reward for the 8th floor should be pretty amazing as well. On the other hand, finding a shard of creation was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He had long thought about finding a counterweight to the splinter in his mind in order to restrain it, and this was his chance. This desire had only increased over the past weeks since his soul had been infiltrated. Shooting out bronze sparks every now and then to weaken the splinter was a patchwork solution at best. But sooner or later, it wouldn't be enough. It felt like he was a pressure cooker waiting to explode, and this might be his only option on hand. The item was just the kind of thing he had envisioned, and Zack felt it wasn't a coincidence he had been placed here. It was a temptation that he could either follow or choose to ignore. But did he even dare to absorb such a thing? The ending of that poor sap who had fused with it previously sounded beyond horrifying, and he didn't really have any means to counteract it, apart from his soul-strengthening manual and the miasmic fractals inside his head. He also didn't dare place his hopes on a second old master popping out of nowhere and giving him another set of fractals to house the shard. The optimal scenario was that the shard would enter the miasmic cage and the two items would restrain each other. The worst-case scenario was that some unexpected chain reaction would take place, causing a massive eruption in energies that would blow both him and the little bean into smithereens. There was also the issue of agency. The words of the seer back on the 73rd level echoed in his mind. He had said that Zack was just as much a pawn as he in the eyes of the system, and perhaps he was right. It couldn't be seen as a coincidence that the system first presented him with the splinter of oblivion at the specially created hunt on his planet, and just a few months later put him next to a shard of creation out of a trillion possible scenarios. What was the goal of the system here? It felt like he was being led by the nose down a path, rather than creating his own destiny, and he wasn't sure for what purpose. It was one thing if the system simply wanted to make him stronger and found a suitable solution for him, but everything he had heard about the system indicated that it wasn't so benevolent, and also not hands-on to this degree. Was the system treating him like a prize hog, feeding him with these two treasures? But to what end? Considering his technocrat heritage, he felt like it couldn't be anything good. Or was it the mysterious Draugr woman who somehow influenced his fate? He had no idea what cultivators standing at the peak were capable of. But was there anything he could do about it, even if he was being manipulated? He needed power, and he had started down a road of no return the moment he got mixed up with the splinter. Things were already spiraling out of control, and this might be his only opportunity to strike a balance in his body. Hesitation gnawed in his heart for a few seconds, but he eventually decided to go for it. The splinter was uncommonly silent in his mind, and he guessed it was because it sensed the presence of its opposite. He needed to make this effect permanent by bringing the shard with him. There were a lot of logical reasons not to take such a massive risk, but every fiber in his body told him to consume it. It felt like he was a puzzle, and the shard was the final piece to finish the image. This wasn't the decision he would have made before the integration, and it probably wasn't even the decision he would have made just a few months ago. But he had realized something during his climb. One needed to push oneself to achieve anything worthwhile. On the surface, it might have seemed that Zack had almost pushed himself beyond what was possible. But most of his actions had been forced out of need. But here was a difference between risking your life to survive and risking your life to push yourself to greater heights. He had mostly done the former, but he knew that he needed to take some risks to keep his momentum going. Things might very well turn to shit, but even the random cultivator on an unintegrated planet had managed to stave off the insanity for a few years. If things truly didn't work out, he would still have time to save Earth and deal with the Dominators, and even have a couple of years to find a way to rip both the items out of his body. Besides, the very fact that he was probably being manipulated into consuming both these items felt like an indication that he wasn't going to die from it. Why would the system, or some mysterious peak being, go through all the trouble of manipulating his fate and the Tower of Eternity, if the end result would be him simply dying? There were a lot of easier ways to kill a puny F-grade warrior. Since he had made his decision, he could only walk forward, taking things as they came. Chapter 37. Clearance.
"Where is the shard stored?" Zack asked after having made his decision.
"It is in a restricted holding bay, with multiple layers of defenses around it," Jowl said, his eyes widening upon the realization that Zack wasn't deterred by the presence of the captain.
"The captain will come the moment he hears his cargo is being targeted. He is part owner of the whole vessel, and it has taken a lot of damage from this mission. If the mission fails, he will face disastrous consequences, but if he succeeds, he will gain centuries' worth of resources."
"How would I gain access?" Zack pushed, ignoring the warnings.
"You can't," Jowl said without hesitation. "I have no idea how to get inside."
"Think harder,"
Zack growled as a black mist started to steam out of his mouth, adding an acrid smell to the cabin.
You would need to have special authorization. But it is impossible for you. You have no neural implants. And even if you get inside, there are extremely strong autonomous Class II guardians inside,"
Jowl exclaimed.
"Don't you have access cards or something?" Zack said with a frown.
"Cards? Like a medieval key?"
Jowl said with incomprehension.
"Why would we have such a blatant security risk as keys that can be stolen?"
"I guess that means you'll have to take me there,"
Zack smiled.
"Are you crazy? You will be spotted in 10 seconds after leaving this place. There's no one on this ship who has eye augmentations that even slightly look like yours,"
the comms officer staunchly refused.
"We'll both be dead within a minute."
Zack snorted as he activated his transformation skill, and the never-ending black in his eyes quickly gave way to white sclera and irises. His deathly pale complexion gained life, and he was once again a normal human, at least outwardly indistinguishable from a technocrat human.
"What?"
Jowl sputtered as he looked up and down at Zack incredulously.
"How is such a perfect transition possible? Not even the chimeral transcenders are able to do something like this before reaching Class 3.
"What's with these classes you're talking about?" Zack muttered. "Isn't it just grades?"
"We refuse to use the classifications of the cursed heavens,"
Jowl said haughtily before remembering he was a hostage at the moment.
No offense." "So, you're just being obstinate?"
"Each class represents a grade,"
Zack confirmed.
"Well, yes,"
Jowl coughed.
"So can we go? And remember, our fates are bound together. I die, you die,"
Zack reminded his hostage.
"You can't,"
Jowl sighed after a short silence.
"That's what I've been telling you. You have no implants, so the ship will consider you an intruder. Only people with clearance will be able to walk around this ship. I don't even understand how you can stand in my cabin without detection."
Zack glared at Jowl before he looked around. The implicit meaning was that the technocrat had expected a rescue, but none seemed to be forthcoming. Zack's brows furrowed with contemplation as he tried to figure out what was going on. Was it the system that protected him? The problem was that he had no idea if that protection extended out of the cabin he found himself in.
So, how do I get clearance? Zack asked.
Get clearance? Impossible! You aren't even connected to the multiverse network through implants or your sigil. Getting clearance is impossible. If it had been so easy, we would have been infiltrated and extinguished long ago.
Zack felt a bit helpless as he looked around the room before he spotted a few small holes in the wall not far away. Did spaceships have air ducts? They should have, considering how many people were aboard. Perhaps if he cut through the floor, he'd find whole service levels he could traverse instead. But before he could ask about it, he suddenly had a thought and his head snapped back toward Jowl.
Sigils? Zack said, an idea suddenly popping up in his head.
Like this?
He took out the necklace that Leandra had left with his father before disappearing. He still hadn't found any use for the thing, but it was obviously more than a simple piece of metal. It had vibrated and moved about in his cosmos sack when he met the technocrat researcher back on Earth, and it might have other functions that would be useful now. He wasn't really worried about attracting his mother's enemies either, as he had been transported God knows where by the system. If anything, it might rather throw Firmament's Edge off the scent by thinking Leandra had popped up on this vessel. The small token suddenly shuddered, making Zack worried he had activated some hidden alarm, but it quickly calmed down again. However, the technocrat hostage wasn't as calm as he looked up and down at Zack with confusion and fear.
"This is impossible! How did you get such clearance?"
Jowl almost screamed.
"What are you talking about?"
Zack said, starting to get a bit exasperated by the rapid change of his captive's emotions.
"And keep your voice down."
I...
Jowl sputtered with clear hesitation on his face.
"Remember, if I get pushed into a corner, I'll take you out before anything else,"
Zack muttered and pushed Jowl with his axe when it looked like the comms officer was planning on cooking up another lie.
"I swear, I don't understand. I don't recognize that insignia, but it has somehow given you level 4 access on our ship. Even I only have level 2 access. It uses some archaic access code I have never heard of before, designating you as a council inspector."
"What council?"
Jowl blabbered. Zack looked down at the necklace in his hand with mixed emotions. It looked like his mother had come through for him after all. He had already known that she was probably some sort of big shot among technocrats before something happened to make her turn traitor, and this seemed to further confirm it. But where was she? Why had she left Earth and her family alone, even to the point that her husband had died from the integration? Long repressed emotions threatened to run rampant as he held the sigil, but he quickly gathered his wits and focused on the task at hand.
"Is level 4 access enough to get to the shard?" Zack asked.
"No," Jowl said. "It gives access to all parts of the ship except critical areas that need the captain's direct authorization. In other words, special authorization."
"Who has special access?"
"Just 2 people, as far as I'm aware. The captain and Dr. Fried,"
Jowl said. Messing with the captain was obviously out of the question, which only left him with one option.
"Who is Dr. Fried?"
Zack probed.
No idea," Jowl said.
"Jowl," Zack growled threateningly.
The comms officer hesitated for a few seconds before he eventually reached toward his eyes and literally pulled them out of their sockets. Zack couldn't stop himself from gaping in shock as the man handed his eyes to him. Zack unconsciously accepted them with confusion before he looked back at Jowl with utter befuddlement. The comms officer didn't say anything, but Zack noted that he had pointed his head down, and it almost looked like the empty sockets were staring straight at Zack's waist. Zack tried to follow the lack of vision, and he suddenly had a hunch of what was going on. He immediately stowed the two eyes into his cosmos sack.
"I put your eyes in my spatial tool," Zack said as he looked at the technocrat with interest.
"I know. I just lost connection,"
Jowl nodded.
"What's going on?" Zack asked.
"I don't want any hard evidence of divulging information about Dr. Fried. He comes from a powerful corporation,"
Jowl sighed.
"Dr. Fried was sent by Deramex Dynamics, our employer's employer. He's an expert at force fields, and he is in charge of keeping the Shard of Creation restrained."
"Sounds like he's doing a pretty shit job,"
Zack muttered as he tried to look anywhere except at the two empty sockets that stared right at him. Was this what it felt like talking with him when he was in his Draugr form?
"Yes, well," Jowl shrugged. "I don't understand how that works, but he has set up multiple layers of restrictions around the Shard in the middle of the bean. I've heard from a few guards that the problems we've seen are just the tip of the iceberg of what goes on within the containment field."
"Dr. Fried has said that the Shard does not like being without a host, and it resents being trapped."
"Likes? Resents?" Zack asked with shock. "It's alive?"
"It's beyond me. Perhaps alive in the sense that a virus is alive?"
Jowl ventured. Zack felt like it was an apt description after having observed the splinter in its prison over the past few months. It wasn't an inert object, but it also didn't feel sentient.
"What strength is the doctor?" Zack asked.
"I think he's late class two," Jowl said hesitantly.
"Is he strong in combat?" Zack asked with a frown.
"I'm pretty sure he's a pure researcher," Jowl said. "Their combat strength is on the lower end, but they no doubt have some means to protect themselves."
Zack grunted in affirmation. This was exactly what he hoped for. The plan he had come up with was pretty simple. He'd use the necklace to get to Dr. Fried, kidnap the researcher, and use him as a key card to the Shard. Seeing as the doctor seemed to have a pretty high status, he might even be able to use him as a hostage to blow up the engines and pass the stage afterward.
"Do you know where to find him?" Zack asked.
"I can point you to his lab on the map," Jowl quickly said. "It's not too far. You'll be able to get there easily."
"Point on the map?" Zack smiled. "We're going together."
Jowl froze for a few seconds before he deflated with a sigh.
"All right. Is there anything else I need to know about the doctor?" Zack asked.
Zack asked a few questions to gauge his strength, but Jowl didn't seem to know too much. The researcher spent almost all his time split between his lab and by the Shard. He was also pretty haughty and barely socialized with the crew. He even seemed to have taken a superior stance toward the captain, even if he was just a class two non-combat class. But that was fine with Zack. It meant that he would get his opportunity as long as he managed to get to the laboratory to set up an ambush.
"Okay, let's go,"
Zack finally said after he had asked everything he could think of.
"Well, you're still looking a bit,"
Jowl hesitantly said. Zack looked down at himself and immediately realized the problem. He looked like someone doing cosplay with his ancient robes and weaponry. It wouldn't take an AI to figure out something was wrong if he walked down the corridors wearing cultivator's robes. His first idea was to take clothes from Jowl, but waving around an axe for months while focusing on endurance and strength had made his build pretty bulky. Jowl was a head shorter and probably weighed 100 pounds less, so getting into his fitted uniform was impossible. It also seemed that the clothes they wore didn't have an automatic fit like his robes. Sending Jowl out for a disguise was out of the question as well. The technocrat would probably rat him out the second he was out of earshot, so Zack had to go with the second best option.
"Call someone here, someone with a similar build as mine," Zack said.
All right. I need my eyes back then,"
Jowl said, and soon enough he pushed the two orbs back into their respective sockets.
So weird, Zack muttered.
Jowl didn't dare to comment, but he rather summoned a screen that appeared in front of him, looking a bit like the status screens that the system used. Zack saw a bunch of faces flash by on the screen until Jowl's eyes lit up. The screen disappeared the next moment, and Jowl slightly turned away.
It's Jowl. Something is wrong with these calculations. Could you assist me? I'll owe you one,
Jowl started muttering into thin air.
Well, it's a bit inconvenient. Could you come to my compartment? Yes, I'm sorry. I'll provide 10% of this month's salary as compensation.
Well? Zack asked.
A colleague will come over in a minute. He is off for the day, so no one will feel it out of place if he's not around,
Jowl said, a small smile creeping up on his face for the first time since getting captured.
His build is pretty similar to yours as well.
Why do you look so happy about this? Zack asked with a raised brow.
He's kind of a work rival, and we're up for the same promotion,
Jowl said, looking a bit embarrassed.
If I have to live through this calamity, I might as well drag him with me.
Fair enough, Zack snorted as he walked next to the door.
But no funny business.
Chapter 38. Undercover. Jowl hurriedly nodded in response to Zack's warning as the ship schematic on the wall changed to a large array of complex schematics and diagrams. They didn't have to wait long until the sliding door opened and a burly man stepped through, his eyes trained on Jowl, who stood by the screen, seemingly in deep thought.
You'd better not be lying about pay,
the man said, but didn't get any further before he was on the ground, twitching.
Undress him and take away anything that he can use to warn people, Zack said. That's impossible. He has implants like everyone else. The moment you try to tamper with them, a warning will go out,
Jowl said with a shake of his head. Zack thought for a few seconds before he took out a vial and threw a pill over to Jowl.
Feed him this, Zack simply said. If he dies, you will be exposed,
the comms technician hesitantly said as he looked down on the pill with trepidation.
It'll just make sure he won't wake up for a day or two, Zack explained.
A minute later, Zack inspected himself on a monitor, and it felt like he was on some science fiction show, as his clothing completely matched that of Jowl's. The clothes of the poor man who was now slumbering in Jowl's sleeping pod were a bit long and snug, but it was a passable fit that shouldn't arouse any attention from a casual glance.
Let's go, Zack said as he cracked his neck. Take me to Dr. Fried's laboratory.
Jowl said before he sighed and shook his head.
Fine, let's go. Try not to speak. If anyone asks, we're heading toward the research department because the scanning equipment has been broken by the shard. This is actually true, but it's a low priority compared to the engines. It would have been better if I had a gift. Some might see this as me taking the chance to suck up to the doctor.
Zack nodded, feeling it wasn't a bad idea.
What kind of gift? Zack probed. Rare materials and stuff like that. Something I could pretend to have picked up on the planet we just visited and wanted to use as a bribe,
Jowl thoughtfully said.
I have a few things, Zack said before he froze as he looked down at his spatial ring.
He hurriedly reached for his pouch, but he breathed out in relief when he saw that all the items were still there, even though he wasn't inside the tower. But what did that mean? Were all his items safe? Or would the confiscation still happen the moment the trial ended? Perhaps it was even possible to cheat the system this way by sending out everything he had gained. But he obviously couldn't trust Jowl to come through and send his amassed wealth back to Earth. Even if Zack somehow managed to make Jowl obey, did the technocrat even have the ability to follow through? They could be anywhere in the multiverse right now, and there was probably no way for some random technocrat to find his sector, let alone Earth. Zack eventually threw out a handful of random materials he hadn't figured out the use of.
This,
Jowl said with wide eyes as he looked at the items that emitted strong fluctuations. So?
Yes,
Jowl hurriedly said as he reached out and took one of the items, a piece of purple wood. It was something that Zack had picked up on the sixth floor. He had noticed that a tree survived even though Zack fought right next to it. The bark was extremely durable, and was even able to resist being cut with the fragment of the axe twice. Strangely enough, the whole tree withered when Zack cut it down to bring with him, leaving only the plank-sized piece of lumber intact. "A piece of wood is actually valuable among technocrats?" Zack asked curiously as he saw Jowl's excitement.
"Well, no. It is rather the unique energy signature of the material that is valuable. We can extract it and infuse it in an alloy to make a stronger material," Jowl said without taking his eyes off the piece of wood. "My preliminary reading says that it should be able to increase the durability of many alloys by some degree."
Zack shrugged, and the two finally left the compartment, and they found themselves in a luxuriant hallway. It didn't feel cramped at all, like how it often was with cruise liners back on Earth. But the hallway was almost 10 meters wide, with occasional seats and greenery. There was even a small artificial river running along the middle, creating a soothing atmosphere. Zack wasn't there to sightsee, though, and they hurried toward the center of the ship. Soon enough, they reached a door that seemed to be a checkpoint between sectors, and Zack noticed how stiff Jowl looked as he waited for it to open. But the door slid open without any issue, making them both release a breath in relief as they kept going. It looked like the insignia left by Leandra really worked like some sort of universal key. It only took a few minutes of walking for the surroundings to quickly change. Zack remembered the map he had studied, and they now were in the sector where the cabins housed over 10 people each. The hallways had become a lot more cramped, and there were even missing platings and exposed wires seen at spots. Zack was surprised at the stark contrast between different parts of the ship. Jowl's compartment and the section around it were hypermodern, with not a speck of dust in the fancy hallways.
"This looks more run down than what I would have expected," Zack muttered with a low voice as they passed through the barracks and a large mess hall. "It's like this part will fall off at any moment."
"Well," Jowl coughed, "we're a freelance freight class vessel bought from an auction selling off the inventory of a defunct company. The ship itself is well over 4,000 years old and long due for an overhaul. The section where I and the higher-ups live was refurbished 5 years ago, but this section..."
4,000 years? Zack exclaimed with surprise.
1,000 years wasn't much in the world of cultivation, but he knew how quickly technology failed back on Earth. A machine holding together for a couple of decades was almost a miracle, and this spaceship had stayed in one piece over thousands of years and countless missions.
"Are there no teleporters on the ship?" Zack asked after they had walked a while.
They had passed through a seemingly endless number of passageways, and were currently passing through what seemed to be a large mess hall. They had passed some people by now, but Zack was relieved to see that they only shot Jowl, or rather the piece of lumber in his arms, a curious glance before continuing with their business.
"There are a few for emergencies," Jowl said after a few seconds. "But we can't use them. They require a lot of energy to power to use. In other words, it is a waste of money."
"Jowl!"
A voice reached them from the other side of the shabby mess hall, and Zack looked over to see a stout woman wave and walk over toward them.
"Deal with this,"
Zack simply said with a low voice before he looked away.
"Ah, Caravan!"
Jowl weakly smiled as he turned around to face the woman, who curiously looked at them.
"I thought you were on duty today.
Can't do anything until the changes stop. The thing is acting up again,
the woman muttered as she curiously looked back and forth between Zack and the piece of wood in Jowl's arms.
What are you up to? Isn't this your day off?
I was planning on seeing if I could pick Dr. Fried's brain about our problems. This is just a small token of my appreciation.
Uh-huh,
she said with a raised brow before she shrugged.
Well, I won't keep you.
Zack's eyes followed her as he walked away, and some killing intent started to leak as he frowned. The splinter in his mind had woken up a few minutes ago, demanding blood to be spilled. Jowl's eyes widened in horror as he sensed the dangerous aura that Zack was leaking, and he tried to drag Zack toward the exit. The door closed behind them, and Zack took a ragged breath before he shot the technician a look.
Let's go,
he said, and started walking again.
We're almost there,
Jowl answered with a sigh. It took them almost half an hour to reach the center of the ship, the massive ball that contained both the containment field for the Shard of Creation and Dr. Fried's temporary lab. Luckily enough, they didn't meet a single guard until they reached the laboratory itself, and Zack felt that the ship was a bit overly reliant on the AI and the security doors. He couldn't be sure, but it seemed like it shouldn't be too hard for an assassin-type cultivator like Faceless Number 9 to cause severe damage to a ship with as lax security as this. However, the door leading into the lab was guarded by two men wearing some sort of tactical gear and holding some sort of energy batons. They didn't feel like real warriors to Zack, but rather security guards who were there to make sure that no one peeked at the researcher's lab without authorization.
I am Jowl Cresson, junior deputy of the communications department. We're here to see Dr. Fried, if possible, to ask a few questions about how to deal with the recent disturbances from the cargo. I brought a small token of my appreciation that I think will pique the doctor's interest,
Jowl said with a slimy smile as he stepped forward.
The doctor is out,
the guard slowly said after having looked at the piece of spiritual wood for a few seconds.
Let me...
He didn't get further, though, as Zack moved forward like a ghost and punched the guard straight in his face as Everlasting appeared from his spatial ring and slammed into the other guard simultaneously. One of the soldiers went down, whereas the other one required another jab before he lay unmoving on the ground.
Hurry,
Zack said as he grabbed the two unconscious men and carried them into the laboratory. Jowl quickly bent over and wiped a spot of blood before he followed with a face as white as a mask.
Zack guessed he hadn't seen a lot of action up close, and the situation was getting a bit tense. He had no idea if his actions just now had caused some hidden alarm to go off, but he had acted on instinct when he saw the guard activating his communication device.
Jowl looked at Zack like he was a lunatic, and Zack started to worry that the comms officer might do something stupid from desperation.
Stay calm, Zack whispered. We'll stow these two in some corner, and after I've captured Dr. Fried, you're free to go.
Yes, yes, Jowl fervently nodded. How did you know the door to the lab would open?
Zack said with raised brows. I just figured it would open like all the other ones.
Jowl's mouth opened as though he wanted to say something, but he slowly closed it again and instead helped move the two guards so that they were hidden beneath a desk in the inner part of the laboratory. Zack fed them a double dose of his knockout pills, even if the guards were just early E-grade at best. He didn't want them waking up anytime soon, even if he started to cause a ruckus when the doctor returned. However, because he had acted so fast, he had no idea where the doctor was or when he would return. He didn't dare walk around and look for Dr. Fried, though, as Zack wasn't meant to be here. He could be stopped at any moment, at which point the jig would be up. He could only hope that the doctor would return to the lab soon enough, But the minutes passed as the two sat in an increasingly oppressive silence, and Zack was starting to get worried. His eyes were slowly growing bloodshot, and his mind was awash with murderous thoughts. The splinter was making itself known, and the effect was even worse than usual. Was it angry because of the close proximity to the shard? Zack could only bear with it for the moment as he took out a soul crystal to try to soothe his soul.
"Your ship isn't quite what I was expecting," Zack finally grunted, grasping for some topic of conversation to distract himself. "It seems you're using a lot of old technology together with newer ones."
"Old technology? All technology is old," Jowl said, seemingly more than happy to break the silence.
"What do you mean? Don't you come up with new things and improve?" Zack said with a frown. "Isn't that the whole point of your factions?"
"Where did you hear that?" Jowl asked with confusion. Zack said, but stopped himself when he realized he had no idea. He had just assumed that the technocrat factions were somewhat like Earth before the integration, constantly figuring out new things. But then again, the technocrat faction was billions of years old. Had they reached a point where they couldn't progress any further?
Chapter 39. The Machine God Faction.
"We're in the 43rd age right now," Jowl said, seemingly understanding Zack's thoughts. "Each age represents the pinnacle of technology taking a step forward, which usually resulted in a trickle-down effect that empowered the whole technocrat faction. But almost all of these ages took place in the early stages of the system era, before it was as powerful as today. The current age has lasted for over 70 million years."
"So you keep doing the same thing over and over again, with no improvement?" Zack asked.
"Isn't heaven's path the same?" Jowl muttered. "Cultivating and fighting, doing the same over and over again?"
"I guess," Zack acceded.
"So how do you improve? How do you become more powerful?"
"Work and save bits? Buy upgrades for myself?" Jowl slowly said. "I've been working on this freight for 4 years, and I was planning on performing my fourth overhaul with my savings, along with the reward for completing this